Okay, let's get into this. You know those times you're trying to tackle a problem, maybe at work or something in your community, and it just feels slippery.
Oh, definitely.
Like the more you try to get a handle on it, the harder it is to even define. And everyone seems to see it completely differently.
Absolutely. Some challenges just feel fundamentally different. They're not like the puzzles we solve in, say, science or engineering.
Right.
They really defy that kind of neat, clear definition and, that sense of resolution we often expect.
Exactly. It's not like fixing a, I don't know, a broken engine or solving a math equation. And there's actually a framework for understanding this. It came about back in 1973 from Horst Rattel and Melvin Weber.
Urban planners.
Yeah. And in their work, they drew this really sharp line between what they call tame problems and something much, much trickier, wicked problems.
And that distinction is so key. It's not just about being complex or difficult. It's about the actual nature of the problem. So our mission, really, in this deep dive is to unpack that Rattel and Weber framework. What makes a problem wicked? How's that different from a tame one? And crucially, why is recognizing that difference change everything about how you'd even approach it?
Okay, so let's start with the side we probably recognize more easily. Tame problems. What do they mean by tame?
Well, tame problems are the ones where, generally speaking, you can agree on what the problem is. You can define it.
Okay.
You can understand it, maybe attribute it to one or just a few clear causes. And really importantly, there's usually a shared understanding of when it's actually solved.
Ah, so you know when you've reached the finish line.
Exactly. You know when
Yeah.
you're done. So you can tackle them systematically. Use scientific methods, engineering approaches guided by clear goals. Systems thinking helps find the best path to that defined solution.
But tame doesn't mean simple, right? I mean, building a suspension bridge must be a tame problem in this sense, but it's incredibly complex.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Yeah, tame isn't about easy or unimportant. These can be huge, vital undertakings. Think about developing a new vaccine
Right.
or designing a city's sanitation system, improving crop yields through, agricultural science. These are complex, definitely. Lots of variables, ethical questions sometimes,
Sure.
but they fit that structure. Definable problem, understandable process, mostly consensual goals and solutions.
And tackling these tame problems, well, it's changed the world, hasn't it?
Oh, without a doubt. A massive amount of human progress, better health, infrastructure, feeding billions. It comes from applying these systematic methods to solve these, well, tame challenges.
Okay, but here's the pivot. Rattel and Weber looked at problems in their field, urban planning, social policy, and they realized these problems just don't fit that mold. They argued most social problems are fundamentally not tame.
And that's where they coined the term wicked problems. Unlike the tame ones, wicked problems, well, they often can't be easily understood or even completely defined. There's often deep disagreement about what the problem really is, or even if it's a problem at all for some people. Just reaching consensus on its nature or how you might resolve it, it's incredibly difficult.
So any understanding feels provisional.
Very much so. Tentative is a good word. Judgments are difficult.
And we're talking about things like education reform, or dealing with chronic homelessness, or maybe local governance conflicts.
Exactly the kinds of issues they were grappling with. And their really crucial insight, the main takeaway, was this: the methods and the mindsets that work so well for tame problems, they simply will not produce adequate solutions for wicked ones.
So trying to treat a wicked problem like it's tame.
It actually gets in the way. It's an impediment to planning, they said. It's often counterproductive.
Wow. Okay, so that's a fundamental shift. It's not just a harder version of a tame problem. It needs a completely different way of thinking.
Absolutely. Wicked problems demand different planning approaches, different kinds of actions, and really different ways of even evaluating if you're making any headway.
So like efficiency? That's great for tame problems, right? Getting the bridge built on time, on budget.
Right. But it doesn't make much sense for a wicked problem where the goal itself might be completely contested or unclear. What are you being efficient towards?
Good point. Okay, so let's really dig into why they're so different. What gives them this wickedness?
Well, a lot of it comes down to their social nature, the fact that they involve diverse groups of people, all with their own valid but often conflicting viewpoints and values. Rattel and Weber laid out several specific characteristics.
Okay, let's walk through them. The first one that always strikes me is that they're ill-defined or no definitive formulation.
Right. You can't just write down a neat problem statement for a wicked problem like you can for, say, a math theorem, the boundaries are fuzzy.
What does that mean, fuzzy boundaries?
It means it's hard to tell where the problem stops and its context begins. And what's really tricky is that the way you understand the problem is totally tangled up with the solution you might propose.
How so?
Well, if you suggest one type of solution, you're often implicitly defining the problem in a particular way. Suggest a different solution, and you're kind of redefining the problem itself. You can't cleanly separate understanding the problem from formulating a solution. Cause and effect get blurred.
So you can't just, like, run diagnostics and find the single root cause in isolation the way you might with a machine.
Not really, no. The causes are often deeply embedded in the whole social system, and they're intertwined with potential solutions, which leads to the next point. There's no stopping rule.
Unlike our bridge, where you know it's finished when traffic can cross it.
Exactly. With a wicked problem, there's no natural or logical or agreed upon point where you can definitively say, okay, solved, we're done here.
So it just keeps going.
You might reach a point where things seem better or an approach is deemed, you know, good enough for now, given the current politics or resources. But conditions always change. People's priorities shift. So there's always room for improvement or refinement or even completely new approaches down the line.
I think you used the sandcastle analogy before we started recording. You can always add another turret.
Exactly. Or dig the moat deeper. You just decide to stop working on it at some point, maybe because you run out of time or energy or the tide's coming in.
But the problem itself hasn't vanished. It's just changed state.
Precisely. It's just in a different state. And because there's no clear stopping rule, it follows that there's also no ultimate evaluation.
Meaning you can't just stamp a solution correct or incorrect.
Right.
True or false.
Right. Solutions to wicked problems aren't judged as true, false, or accomplished, not accomplished in some final objective way. They tend to be judged as better or worse, maybe good enough, acceptable, or unacceptable.
Judged by them.
By the people affected. And those judgments are inherently subjective. They're based on people's values, their unique perspectives, their circumstances, which are always changing. What one group sees as a definite improvement, another group might see as making things worse.
So relying purely on, say, quantitative metrics won't cut it.
Oh, far from it. You could have a single program, let's say a new school curriculum. It might get positive reviews based on initial test scores, right?
Yeah, looks good on paper.
But maybe years later, people realize those same students struggle with critical thinking in college. So the evaluation shifts, it becomes negative. Success is completely dependent on whose perspective you adopt, what criteria they value, and when you're actually asking the question.
That sounds messy. And it leads into another really difficult characteristic. Every solution matters. Mm. And this idea that there's no right to be wrong in the way a scientist might test a hypothesis.
Yeah, this one carries a lot of weight. Unlike, say, building engineering prototypes that you can test and discard if they fail.
Or running simulations.
Exactly. When you implement an approach to a wicked social problem, it has real, tangible, and often irreversible consequences for the people involved. You can't just try out a solution on a community and then say, oops, didn't work, let's scrap it, without having caused real impact, maybe harm.
Like changing how reading is taught in elementary schools. That fundamentally affects those kids' futures, right?
Well,
you can't just hit rewind.
Exactly. You don't get a do-over on the same group of people without consequences. And this places a huge ethical responsibility on anyone trying to intervene in a wicked problem. You have to act with the best possible information and judgment, knowing the stakes are high.
And given all this complexity, just copying a solution that seemed to work somewhere else, probably a bad idea.
Very likely, yes. Which brings us to the next point. Each wicked problem is unique, and therefore, each wicked solution is unique, too.
Why unique?
Because the specific context, the history of the place, the local culture, the particular mix of people involved, the political dynamics, the economic situation, all these factors interact in incredibly complex ways. You simply can't replicate those conditions perfectly from one city or one organization or one community to another.
So taking a successful anti-poverty program from City A and just dropping it into City B, no guarantee it works the same way.
Absolutely not. It might fail spectacularly or have completely unforeseen side effects. This uniqueness means there's no standard playbook, no set of best practices you can just pull off the shelf.
So you need, what, creativity?
Yes. innovation, creativity, deep contextual understanding. You have to design approaches tailored specifically to that unique situation. Unlike a game like chess, with fixed rules and a defined set of possible moves, with wicked problems, there are no predefined limits on potential solutions. You essentially have to invent them.
And it gets even more tangled, doesn't it? Because these problems don't exist in neat little boxes. They're interconnected.
Right. Deeply so. Wicked problems are almost always part of a larger network of problems. One issue might be a symptom of a deeper problem or a cause of several others, or maybe both.
Like pulling on a single thread in a sweater.
And the whole thing shifts, yeah. Trying to solve just one piece in isolation is incredibly difficult, maybe impossible. And worse, your well-intentioned solution in one area might trigger completely new, unexpected problems somewhere else in the system.
You fix traffic congestion here, and suddenly parking becomes a nightmare over there.
That kind of thing, exactly. And you often don't have control over all the factors that are influencing the problem or the potential outcomes of your actions. An external event, a political shift, resistance from a powerful group, any of these can derail even the most carefully planned approach.
Okay, that interconnection and lack of control definitely ramp up the wickedness. Now, the last characteristic you mentioned, and maybe this is the most fundamental, is multiple valid perceptions.
Yeah, this really gets to the heart of the social dimension. The very same situation, the same problem, can be described and understood accurately, but in completely different, even contradictory ways by the different people or groups involved.
You mean they're not just disagreeing, they actually see it differently?
Yes. And their views can all be valid from their own standpoint. Riddle and Weber gave this fantastic, vivid example from a real-world debate about school funding. Members of the same community described their local schools as, listen to this, a glorified babysitting service, an unbearable burden on the taxpayer, the best investment in our future, and a priceless source of community pride.
Wow. All those things at once. How about the same school?
Exactly. And from the perspective of the person saying each phrase, their description felt entirely true and justified based on their own experiences, their values, their priorities.
So there's no single objective truth about the school system in that case.
Precisely. This highlights that with wicked problems, people's subjective experiences aren't just noise to be filtered out. They are the reality you have to work with. Understanding those diverse, valid perspectives is absolutely key to even beginning to navigate the problem.
Okay, so putting it all together, this framework paints a picture of wicked problems as these really messy, complex social challenges. They have no clear definition, no single right solution, no definite endpoint. They're judged subjectively, unique to their context, tangled up with other problems, and viewed in fundamentally different ways by the people involved.
That's a great summary. And crucially, trying to tackle them with the tools and mindsets suited for tame problems, that systematic, find the optimal solution approach, it just doesn't work. It misses the point.
So this whole framework, it's valuable because, well, it helps make sense of why some of those huge persistent challenges we see in society, in our organizations, maybe even in our own lives, why they feel so hard, so controversial, so ongoing.
Exactly. It gives you a language, a lens to understand that feeling of intractability.
And it really shifts your expectations, doesn't it? You kind of stop thinking, okay, how do we solve this once and for all? And you start asking different questions.
You really do. You move away from searching for the optimal permanent fix. Instead, the focus shifts towards things like managing the inherent complexity, learning how to navigate all those different valid perspectives, finding approaches that are maybe good enough or better for now, and critically, building in the ability to constantly adapt as the situation inevitably evolves.
So for you listening, really grasping this difference between tame and wicked problems, the way Riddle and Weber laid it out, it can genuinely change how you think about tackling the really tough stuff, especially anything involving diverse groups of people and complex social systems.
It really underscores the purely technical or engineering mindset. While incredibly powerful for certain kinds of problems, the tame ones, it's just insufficient on its own when you're dealing with issues rooted in diverse human values, tangled histories, and interconnected social realities. You need something more.
Which kind of leaves us with a big question to ponder, doesn't it? Mm. If these wicked problems truly have no definitive solutions in the traditional sense, no clear finish lines, and their outcomes are judged subjectively from all these different valid viewpoints, then when we engage with them, what should the real goal actually be?
Mm.
Is it progress as we normally define it? Is it about building resilience? Is it just continuous adaptation? Or is it maybe something else entirely, something that isn't really about solving at all?